live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
They say that size doesn't matter, but we all know that's a lie. Size always matters when you're talking about trucks or that steak that you ate last night. Don't fall for those cheap gimmicks or stupid commercials. You want to increase your size, do it the old-fashioned way. Get yourself some man tires. That's right, man tires. A good set of man tires can change any wussy wagon into a respectable man-mobile in minutes. Just visit mymantires.com and see what you've been missing. That's mymantires.com. Men, the time is now. Log on to mymantires.com and tell them you want some of them man tires. Man tires, the original male enhancement. Available now, only on mymantires.com.
Supporting bees, the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
You are listening to the RC Scale Builder Show on Warbird Radio. Now here is your host, Mike Chilson.
And welcome to the RC Scale Builder Show. Today is Tuesday, April 7th, 2015. And as the lovely lady said, I'm your host, Mike Chilson. And I want to welcome you to the show tonight. Whether you're listening live with us while we record the podcast, or if you're listening later on, we're glad you could join us. If you're listening live, be sure and participate by calling us at 478-787-4768. If you have Skype, you can Skype us at Warbird Radio, all one word. Or join us in the live chat on Warbird Radio by clicking on the link under the Listen Live graphic on Warbird Radio. We've got kind of an interesting show tonight. I wanted to go into this tonight because I almost forgot it this year. But every year we try and have a safety show and talk about prepping your models for flying season each year. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We've got a couple of things to go over. If you are looking at the show notes or if you're looking at the homepage of RC Scale Builder, there's a link there for the seasonal model checklist. Okay, and this is just a PDF document you can download and print on your printer for print as many copies as you want. And it's a good overall checklist to go through and check your model each year. We're not going to talk specifically about all the individual items on this, but what I really like to do is get you guys to call in tonight and maybe talk about some specific things that you guys do to get your models ready each year. And I'll kick it off by saying that, you know, one thing that I do every year that maybe some people consider silly, but I've found it gives me peace of mind, is I change all my fuel lines out every year. Because running gasoline engines, they tend to get hard and brittle, and that just gives me peace of mind that I have a good fuel delivery system. And, of course, I check my batteries thoroughly and so on and so forth. But I'd really like to hear what you guys do specifically. So give us a call at 478-787-4768. You can Skype us at Warbird Radio, all one word, or post your question or comment in the chat room on Warbird Radio. With that said, I'd like to discuss the checklist a little bit, and I've got it pulled up here. It's kind of broken down into some general categories. Mostly by, you know, what area of the airframe that you're going to be looking at. But basically, there's a couple things you want to check. You want to check the finish for cracks and so forth. Obviously, the general structure of the airframe, the control surfaces, your landing gear. Fuel systems, make sure that your fuel lines are not brittle and that your clunk is in the correct place in the tank and it's clean if you're using a filtering clunk. Also, you want to check your engine and propeller and make sure they're secure and mounted and everything's right about them. And then, of course, all the radio and electrical components. This used to be a huge problem. It's not so much anymore, but a lot of times connections, especially ones that you pull apart and push back together, like where you join the wing to the aircraft, those tend to get loose pretty easy, and so you really want to be extra careful checking those. But the list pretty much covers all of these sections, and I'd encourage you to download it and print it out and go over your model. And I'll tell you a little story about this list. Is we actually use this list at some of our fly-ins that we host at a local club, and someone asked, "Well, why do you do this?" And we just say, "Well, you know, we want everybody to take a hard look at their airplane." It's not quite as in depth as this list, but sure enough, every time we've done that, someone has found something on their plane. So it's a smart idea to do this at least once a year and check everything out. So I guess that's pretty much it about the checklist. You know, the main things that seem to fail on planes, from my experience, have been the batteries, the switches, and the fuel systems. So those are kind of the main things that you want to check. I mean, you want to check everything, but you want to pay special attention to those. You know, along with that, especially with the inclusion of LIFE and A123 cells these days, I think a lot of people tend to overlook the electrical system more than they used to. So it's a good idea to check that out and make sure your batteries are in good condition and your switches are in good condition. And also with the fuel and the fuel lines, same thing. You want to pull that tank out, take the stopper off, replace the stopper if you need to, change out the fuel line. I started using these clunks, and you can get them at any small engine place. It's basically a felt filtered clunk, and they're for small gasoline engines. But they do a real good job filtering, and they keep the bubbles out of your fuel line as much as possible. That's the great part about them. I'll usually change those out if they start looking brown a little bit from, you know, just the junk being brought in from the gas can. But you want to do that, and you want to change all your fuel lines, check them. If they're getting hard and brittle, you want to go ahead and change those out. Some people use, I believe they're neoprene lines, but, you know, that's kind of a personal choice. But, you know, the Tigon that we all use for gasoline engine, it definitely gets brittle over time, so you have to change it out. Looks like we're not going to get anybody calling in tonight. So you know what? I think we're going to call somebody.
I think you have a caller.
No, do we? Is this Dino DiGiorgio?
What's up, party people?
Hey man, how's it going tonight?
Good. How are you? How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing good. We're just having the show, and you know, nobody's calling in, even though we got a lot of people listening. Everybody's playing, you know, playing silent. But so we thought.
Well,
I figured
somebody must have canceled or something for you to be bothering with me.
No, I wanted to. I had a question for you. You know,
all right.
How do you deal with hard and brittle fuel lines? You know,
how do I deal with hard and brittle fuel lines?
Yeah.
Replace them.
There you go. See, folks, you heard it right from the man's mouth.
Now so, try to find non-ethanol fuel.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what she said, right?
Right.
Hey, so look, I know you're working on that P-47. Are you working on it tonight, or are you taking a break?
I'm working on it as we speak.
Well, good. Look, I want everyone to know who's going to be down at Top Gun that they need to come by and look at that beautiful bird, because the work you're doing on it is incredible. And we just actually wanted to take a minute and give you a call. And I haven't been able to talk to you in a while, so I wanted to call you and tell you good luck. I don't know for sure if I'm going to be able to make it or not. So
I hope you can make it. Maybe Matt, can make it sometime. That would be great.
I'm going to be there at Sun and Fun, Dino. I don't know if you're going to come down or not, but it's a little
no, early. I'll have no fun in the sun.
Oh, but, it's always a party down there with you, though. I know where you're at down there in Florida. I'll tell you what, if you come to Sun and Fun, maybe we can arrange some karaoke.
Well, that can happen, but the system is here in Fort Pierce, so you're gonna have to head this way. I'm only about 3 hours from Sun and Fun.
I have a system down there, Dino. I have a big system down there. Yeah, it could be fun.
A big system.
It could be fun.
I know
a guy that knows a guy. Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah, we could just have
that would be great.
Have you sing Feelings or the Top Gun anthem or whatever it is you want to sing. That'd be fun. An evening with Dino. There you go.
Celine Dion's my personal favorite, but don't tell
him. That's right. You haven't seen anything until you've seen Dino karaoke to the theme from what is it? Golly.
It would have been funny, but now it's
Dirty
just,
Dance.
Oh, the Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah.
I
have a question for you. You know, this is no how walk us through this, because okay, so you take an airplane to Top Gun, and obviously tonight's talking about safety and getting everything out of there. Walk us through your test flight. Walk us through a test flight procedure. What do you do when you first lift off with that new, thousands and thousands of dollars invested in this thing? And sometimes not even your own. Sometimes you're flying an airplane for somebody. Walk us through that procedure there.
Well, the feeling is the same regardless if you're flying your own or somebody else's. I mean, I've always trained myself that I don't care how old the airplane is or how many flights you have on it. To me, mentally, every flight is a test flight because anything can happen at any time. So you have to be prepared for that. I mean, the only thing is you're not in the plane, so you really don't know what's going on. Sometimes you can tell, sometimes you can't tell. I mean, I've had issues at Top Gun where I've had a flap servo fail, and it happened to be coincidental where it was the right flap and I was in a left-hand turn. So as I was dropping the flap, it was, creating lift on the right side of the wing and pushing it more over into the turn. And I said, well, it's usually windy at Top Gun. It felt like the wind. And the more I put the flap down, the more it kept going. So I had full right aileron and full left rudder. And it was on one of my landing approaches, and I was already committed at that time. So I couldn't fight the airplane with cross-controlling and move my hands off the sticks to put the flaps up. I had it under control. It was okay. It wasn't a pretty landing, but I realized that left flap never came down. So, if you can realize what your issue is, then you're ahead of the game.
Yeah, that's right. So prepping for let's talk about every season. Let's take it a step further back. What first time you're going to take a plane out for the season, do you do anything to it before you take it out?
Well, I always cycle the batteries, number one. If they're 3 to 4 years old, I start with new packs. It's just not worth it for a $50 battery pack to fail. Not saying that it can't fail on a new pack, but you can only do so much preparations, in damage mitigation, I guess you could say, damage loss control. But you prep the airplane, you check all the hinges, any cracks, anything loose on your controls. Make sure that all your servo screws haven't come loose, especially the ones that hold the horns on. That has happened before, not with me, but with a customer's airplane that flew it. Was in Colorado. He gave me the radio. He said, something doesn't feel right. I said, okay. He hands me the radio. I have no elevator and a Corsair. None. And I said, well, this isn't going to be pretty, but I slowed the plane down and used the flaps as my elevator to control the controlled crash, I'm going to call it, which was a belly landing with no elevator. And, we got the plane back, minimal damage, and checked it, and he forgot to put the screw in that holds the elevator. Now, you know, when somebody comes up to you, whether it be a customer or a friend, you know, you are primarily, besides what you see on the outside, you know, you should go through and check on the inside, but 9 out of 10 times it doesn't happen. You assume that the builder has done his job, but you can never assume.
Right. That's right. That's very true. Well, that's awesome, you know, and you're kind of the king of test flights. so it's great to get some advice from you on that. But
go ahead.
I was just going to say we were talking about, you know, getting planes ready for the season this year, and pretty much, yeah, you kind of hit on all the tough spots where there's failures. It's usually screws, fuel lines, or batteries, something like that, you know.
Right. I mean, you can only do so much. I mean, you know, you expect that your servos are going to work properly, and that's something that you have no control over. I mean, you don't. Unless it's in a crash, you take them out and you throw them away. You never use a servo that's in a crash. You know, so it could be a 10-year-old servo, it could be a 1-day-old servo. They can fail. And you really can't see that happening unless there's a bind. You know, you check all your controls, make sure there's nothing rubbing or binding that can cause that type of strain. That's about all you can really do.
Yep.
When it comes to the servo.
You're absolutely right. So, I haven't got a chance to even talk to you. You've been so busy, but how's everything else going? Is the model coming along okay?
Yeah, I mean, it's a special model. There's some guys who know the history about it, and the short version is that this was the second Meister P-47 that was ever built off of Jim's plans. The first, the prototype was built by Ty Brown, and then Jim sent Dad a set of plans, and he built it, and was it built in 94 through 95 for Top Gun in 1995, and we competed, and, you know, back then, I mean, you know, the servo equipment and the landing gear equipment was, you know, all what we had. You know, 120-ounce torque servo was pretty much the highest, you know, analog. Yeah. You know, now we've got 400-ounce-plus, you know, ounces of torque servos now. So, but we flew the plane at Top Gun 95. We had some landing gear issues. We had some engine issues, and basically that was the end of the P-47, and it sat for 20 years, and, you know, my good friend Doug Smith down at Dead Man Auto Body, you know, one of my flying buddies, you know, we're talking, and he said, you know, it'd be a great idea to bring it back for a 20-year reunion. And we said, yeah, and, you know, the time goes by so fast. You know, he's got a business, and, you know, so he was helping me with the plane, with the body, because, like I said, that everything is 20 years old. And you talk about a plane that, you know, you really got to triple check because wood gets brittle after 20 years. You know, so we went through the airplane and set it all up, and you know, we almost had a catastrophic loss. He was tightening the wing down, and, you know, he heard a little crack, and he just thought that, well, it's 20-year-old wood. And I did a very mild test flight on it, landed it, and when we took it apart, the section that holds the tie down for the wing, the wood had just, you know, cracked and split. So, you know, I always say, and this is a prime example, to do a very light test flight and check everything out, you know, after, you don't have to go spend 15, 20 minutes, you know, 5, 10 minute flight, bring it down and check over everything. And I'm lucky that we did that. So, or the plane wouldn't have been around and stuff like that. You talk about, you know, preparation. That's unforeseen. I mean, you know, it felt strong. It looked strong, but it wasn't. So, you know, that was all fixed up. But, yeah, I mean, so the plane's 20 years old, and it'll be the first time coming back in 20 years after to Top Gun competing.
Yep.
So,
it started as a
team effort with my dad and myself, and it's ending up in a team effort with a whole bunch of friends that, you know, want to see it go. So,
Sure. Well, that's awesome. Man, I wish I could come down and help you get it ready.
Well, yeah, come on. PJ's coming.
Yeah, I heard PJ's coming down to help you, so, you know,
PJ, we'll see how much work I can squeeze out of him, PJ's coming, you know, Patrick's been over, you know, laying out some lines and doing some rivets, and he came over the other night, and we laid the lines on the fuse, and he said, okay, have fun riveting, and he was gone, so. So that's good. But the fuse is almost done. I'm working on the tail now. I'm trying to preserve, not preserve, but I'm using the old checkerboard that's on here. And, you know, we had some things that need to be fixed. So there's primer over it. So I got to reshoot the whole tail and checkerboard again, but I'm just getting that ready now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good deal. Well, I'm glad you were able to take a minute and talk to us tonight.
Oh, I'm glad that I was able to talk to you guys as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's see, I know what I was going to ask you. Here's something a lot of people ask me about. Do you ever, like when you're getting a plane ready to fly for the first time, do you ever take it out in primer, or do you just wait and go ahead and paint it all, or does it just depend on the model, or what? Do you completely
that's
finish
an interesting
it,
question.
Or do you just do it in primer?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, I mean, I guess the most common answer that I hear is most guys will fly them in primer. That way, if there's any issues or whatever they have to do, or belly landings or whatever, gear issues, that they don't have to repaint. But, you know, for me, I don't know. I typically will build it start to finish and then fly it. You know, this is the way that I do it. But the P-47, just because of time issue, we retest with this in primer, and I mean, I knew that the plane was fine. I mean, you know, it's been, plane's been around for 20 years as far as the design, but I tend to go all out and then just go for it.
You know, Mike, I knew a guy that would never take a picture of an airplane until after he'd flown it.
Oh yeah. I've
heard
that one.
He said, "Well, what's the point in taking a picture? It ain't an airplane until it's flown." And I always think, "Oh, okay." And he re-kitted a couple of them.
I bet you
he wished that he had some pictures.
No, he would turn around and he would say, "Who took a picture of it?" In a very accusatory manner, you know, like it caused the airplane to crash. But that superstition stuff, there's a great deal of that among modelers in some respects, you know.
Oh, yeah,
I guess, you know, a little superstition. Never
well, I mean,
heard,
we all know
no,
Mike flies with a chicken bone around his neck. I don't know if you knew that or not, Dino, but yeah.
No, did he get that from Gorin?
He may have. And there's always a Krispy Kreme donut on the back of his flying box for some reason.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I got to see, in my opinion, Dino is one of the best, if not the best, warbird pilot out there. And he can fly just about anything, just like he's been flying it for several years when he picks up the transmitter. But I got to see him a couple of years ago lose one of his 9 lives when he made in someone's little Arado. You remember that, Dino?
I'll never forget it.
And yeah. Let me tell you how cool under pressure this guy is, Matt. So this thing, first of all, he takes off, and he's having to cross-control it because the thing's got a warp in the wing, okay?
Oh, it took off and went sideways immediately.
Yeah, so he's cross-controlling it, okay? And he's flying it, and it's flying not super fast, but it's flying. And he's down at max, and he goes out over the trees there. And right there where you come out of the trees over that soybean field.
I know that area very well, Mike.
Yeah. The plane just snapped.
Oh, no.
And it's spiraling down at a 45-degree angle. And just, I mean, we're
it went
we're
through like three spins, didn't it?
Yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. And I don't know how he did it or what voodoo magic he twitched with his body, but that all of a sudden that plane straightened out and came out of that spin and just he pulled it up, came around and landed it.
And just as sideways as we took off.
Exactly. Yeah, landed in that side slip in 45 degrees. Okay.
Wow.
And I have never seen Dino shake before, but that was the one time I've seen him shake.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. It got very quiet there for a second.
Yeah, I would have to say that was probably the pinnacle that I've ever seen of your piloting skills was pulling that out of that spin. That was amazing.
Well, You should have been at Monster Planes when Eduardo almost lost the B-17.
I was there. I remember that. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because the problem with that one was from where I was standing, and there's a video on YouTube. If you type in, I think, giant B-17 almost crash or something, it's on YouTube. But from where I was standing, of course, in the middle where the pilots stand, and the guy who was taking the video was all the way down toward that large full-scale hangar. So my perspective and where he was with the camera was totally two different places. So where I was standing, when it snapped, it went behind the tree line. So I couldn't tell where it was. I just noticed what attitude it was going in when it went behind the tree line. And the video, you can't see that. It shows it being open because there's an opening there. So, but anyway, I grabbed the transmitter. Now, the transmitter was still stuck to Eduardo's neck with his neck strap. So usually I grab the transmitter and I start running where I can try and see it. And I'm yelling at him. I realized once I grabbed it that there was a force. I'm like tugging and I'm like, oh, I look down and it's the neck strap. And I'm like, run with me, you know, I got it back out and over the tree lines and two engines quit. Second engine quit on final.
Jeez.
So.
Run with me, he says.
Run with me.
I never will forget that. And then when you landed the two, it was like one engine went out, right?
Four engine went out.
Right. And then when you landed, two more engines went out, right?
When I landed, the number one engine went out, so it was just two engines.
Okay, yeah. And I was holy crap.
So you had the two inboard engines running.
The two inboards running. Right. Now, that brings me to a quick story with Doug's B-17 that he's had for, I don't know, 15 years. It was Don Smith that had four G-23s on it. Now, it was a little bit smaller, but it was still, I think, 140-inch wingspan or 144. And we were in Cape Coral, and the winds were blowing, and nobody was flying, and we're there to do an air show. And Doug's like, come on, we got to go. Okay. So I take off, and this is no lie, absolutely no lie. I started taking off. I pulled up. I didn't even get the gear up, and the plane loses number four. Now, Doug's standing next to me, and he goes, well, all right, number four's out. What else could go wrong? Not a split second, number one goes out. So now the plane is literally hanging, just at full throttle, hanging in front of us, like hovering at full throttle. And it started creeping, you know, gears up, and it's creeping and creeping. And now I'm over where people could walk across the end of the runway, and I said, well, I got to get it over. I can't ditch it now. And it was just bad all around. And I got it around. Let me tell you, it was the most shallow turn you'll ever see in your life. This big B-17, I took the turn so shallow that it was just a little speck when it was turning back downwind. So once it turned downwind, it lost the minimal airspeed that it had. The left wing snapped over, and that spun. And all I remember hearing is the crowd going, when you hear that. And we thought it was gone. Well, I fought it with the rudder. I got it back and, you know, had full throttle until it landed. And I've got some still pictures of that landing with the two inboards screaming bloody murder. Now, there's no air going over the ailerons because it's just over the center by the fuse. So there was nothing to help it. You know, if it was the two outers, it would have helped out a lot better. But, there's been a couple of saves in my career that I can remember.
I hear you. So, look, we don't want to hold you up because we know you're trying to get this plane finished, but we just wanted to give you a call and touch base with you. No one was calling in, so we thought we would call somebody. And who's the natural choice to call?
Dino. The world champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Why not?
The Georgia.
Well, I appreciate it, guys.
Hey, you know, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, buddy. You know that.
If you get any questions in the interim, you want to call me back, I'll be here riveting away.
Okay. Well, somebody wanted to know where you got that cool blonde long hairstyle that you wear sometimes.
Oh, that's from my buddy Mike Chilson. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what you're talking
about. That's my Wayne's World tribute.
I am convinced, yeah. Dino, I don't know about you, but, you know, Mike is really, he's staying around the house a lot more now, even though he's going to Toledo. But I'm convinced he's not getting out very much. these days.
That's work, man.
He says it's work, but I'm almost thinking, I drove through Birmingham the other day. Well, not the other day.
The other day. Come on. A
few months ago, and I called him up, and I said, hey, Mike, I'm coming through town. Can you meet me? And he goes, well, I'm on the back side of the house right now, and I just don't know if I can get up there and answer the door. But if you come by, we'll see. I mean, it's always something. So I hope he gets out some this year. So if you can help me, let's get him out of the house and start flying.
I've been trying.
I know.
I've been trying. I've offered him to come out and spend a couple of days here in sunny Florida.
We're getting worried about you, Mike.
And he
Your
keeps
friends.
Coming up with excuses.
I know.
I don't know. Work.
I know.
He says work. He keeps saying what's being called work. Work.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't get it. Thanks, Dino.
I'm just going to turn into a hermit.
That's right. That's right. You and Miss Kitty.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Well, he's got a couple of kitties.
Yeah. Okay, easy, bulldog.
That's all I'm saying.
I'll play the break for you, Mike. How about that?
Okay, stick around, folks. We'll be right back after these messages.
Thanks, Dino.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
They say that size doesn't matter, but we all know that's a lie. Size always matters when you're talking about trucks or that steak that you ate last night. Don't fall for those cheap gimmicks or stupid commercials. You want to increase your size, do it the old-fashioned way. Get yourself some man tires. That's right, man tires. A good set of man tires can change any wussy wagon into a respectable man-mobile in minutes. Just visit mymantires.com and see what you've been missing. That's mymantires.com. Men, the time is now. Log on to mymantires.com and tell them you want some of them man tires. Man tires, the original male enhancement. Available now, only on mymantires.com.
Supporting bees, the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in, take off.
You are listening to the RC Scale Builder Show on Warbird Radio. Now here is your host, Mike Chilson.
I think we need to change the theme song to the thing from theme from Shaft.
I have her, when you call me, she's your ringtone.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah, it says Mike Chilson. So, it's great. How about that Dino DeGiorgio, man? He's not on the phone anymore, but, I mean, that is the guy that you read about him everywhere. I mean, he's the it guy. So
he is the man. That's what I like to say.
I have a confession to make, in full disclosure for you. Can I tell you this story real quick?
Absolutely.
I know you're talking safety, but so I go out the other day and I buy one of these tiny park flyers. It's like the size of a desktop display model.
Right.
The Corsair.
Right.
Because that's what the co-pilot wanted. I was all about the B-17 or something else, but he won the Corsair. So we bring the Corsair back to the hangar, and the guy's telling me, this thing's got three gyros in it. It's just incredible. I'm thinking, good Lord, for $100 bill, you can get all this now.
I know, it's amazing.
And it's science fiction, Mike. The thing is so tiny. So I get it back in the hangar, and I'm messing around with it. And it was my winter project this year, was taking it out of the box. And then I'm standing there like a total moron. I'm like, how do I bind it? I had no clue how to bind this thing, so I had to. I felt like they don't tell you; they just say bind the airplane and then go and fly. Well, but how do you bind it? And I'm almost about ready to cut in and like put the bind plug in, and then I call the guy. I'm like, this is stupid. Even a modeler wouldn't do that. So I call the guy, and he looks at me like I'm a moron, like I'm a total moron, and he says, "Well, you just hold down the button on the back of your radio, like." I felt like the guy from that movie. Remember where the young man lives in the bomb shelter? His parents live in the bomb shelter?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he comes up
and
he meets. I felt just like that guy. I'm like, and I'm like, really? And he goes, well, yeah. And I'm like, oh, there's no need to put a plug in or anything. And he goes, no. Just turn it on and, and push this button and then it will work. Magic. I don't know how it happened. So that was my new model experience. I'm telling you, it's been a few years. But I'm still flying. I'm just flying old stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That same hobby shop guy a young guy walks in with it with a radio, and he says, "Hey, I bought this in a garage sale. What do I do with it?" And the kid behind the counter goes, "Well, this is a Crystal radio, and we don't recommend them now for gas motors because they're not safe. It could crash." And the guy's like, "Well, what do you mean?" And he goes, "Well, it's a Crystal. It could go out at any time." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" I'm like, "Oh my God, I am officially now an old man. I am officially an old man now." So back to your show, and don't fly those Crystal powered airplanes. And whatever you do, don't fly an AM radio, because that'll just kill you right there.
Absolutely. Well, hey, just a couple of things to cover. Don't forget, guys, that I think Mike Marecki still has a couple of the M&M color chip books still available. There's a post on the homepage there. If you've never seen one of these, this is the definitive guide for color chip books. He's brought back a limited supply that he had, and he sold them for $55 per book, and it's well worth it. It's really, really a nice resource to have. Upcoming events this weekend, Toledo Week Signals Show. We're having the RC Scale Builder dinner Saturday night.
Is Platt going to be there?
No, you know, Dave doesn't come.
I know he doesn't go, but I mean, is he going to show up to your dinner, though?
No. Did I tell? Oh, I didn't tell you this. I saw him. You're never going to believe this.
No, you did. You saw him at Perry.
Perry, Georgia. Yeah.
Yeah. Dave was slumming down at the swap meet.
Blew me away. I was like, what the heck? So, I was shocked at that. But anyway, we're having the RCSB dinner Saturday night. If you're going to be at the Toledo show, be sure and check the site news on RC Scale Builder if you're interested in going. Let me know how many are going to be there so we can update the reservations. We've got a Scale Masters qualifier in Hermit, California this weekend coming up. Also, CEF, the Southeastern Electric Fly-In, is coming up the week of April 20th through the 26th at Mac Hodges Place. If you've never been to that, you need to go check it out sometime. It's something you need to see at least once in your life. So
that is a phenomenal. I could take my Corsair down there.
You could. You could.
The smallest airplane around. I'll tell you what, though. That little thing handled the wind pretty well. It was really blowing. We were like 15, 20 knots, and I flew it. And it just, I've never seen anything go up and down 20 feet so fast. But it was incredible. Very, very neat little airplane.
Yep, absolutely. I've flown the little P-40 that's like that, you know. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's just something to play with. It parks right underneath the chipmunk, and I just taxi it out in front of the hangar and go fly it.
That's right.
And I just pull it right back in. It's so small. You know, when I was a kid, I mean, that was always the dream was, you know, flying one of your plastic models or something. Remember that? You know what I mean? That is like reality with, you know, three-axis gyros and all this other. I mean, who would have thunk that a few years ago that's even possible? I have a question for you. How do you prep with all the new rules? I mean, look, you and I both know that some of this stuff is just, you know, legalese and covering your rump. But how do you prep this time of year? What do you recommend guys that are getting into the hobby? You're getting ready to fly your first giant scale airplane. What do you recommend they do studying up on the rules? Because a lot of that's, you know, it's been in the public eye here the last few weeks. They're calling it drones and how drones interact. I mean, what do you recommend? What do you recommend?
Well, first of all, the basic rule set for model airplanes has not really changed that much. So the obvious thing you want to do is just grab a copy of the AMA guidelines and go over that and check it out, because those rules are pretty much in step with the FAA, and if you follow those, you won't have any problems with the FAA.
Growing up, we weren't worried. I mean, if we flew over 400 feet, because, I mean, come on, every kid did it back then. They said, well, how high will this thing go? Well, let's see how high we can see it. Especially the glider guys. I could imagine this impacting them more than just about anybody.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
If that cap is there, and look, nobody's out there shooting up a laser to figure out how high you are, but they may.
Yeah.
They may be, and that's... It's like a very real problem. You know, there's some kid in the background thinking that that could happen to him. I mean, so that's yeah. that's something to be aware of, I guess.
And you're right.
In a
you're
public
right.
place, you know, yeah. technology is out there more so than it was 20 years ago, and you just got to be careful of that.
Yeah, and you know the thing. I mean, it's just common sense. You know, we've this is Mike's opinion, so take this for what it's worth. But the flooding of the market of these inexpensive quadcopters, I think, has, you know, put them in the hands of a lot of people who do not understand what they're doing in any shape or form, and they just go out there and play with them. And the problem is that reflects on our hobby, you know, as a whole. So, you know, the biggest thing I can tell people about that is if you see someone doing this, offer to help them, okay? Even if it's just, you know, convey the basic rules to them about, you know, flying model airplanes. Because this is going to be, you know, what can damage our hobby is when the commercial market floods the shelves with this kind of, with this junk that they're selling for under $100. And
yeah. And be clear. I paid $109.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking about these, I'm talking about these little $39.95 yeah. quadcopters.
Right, you know, right. Right. Right.
With a video camera on them that right. everybody wants to take up to 2000 feet. And, yeah, you know, so try and help those people, invite them to your club, invite them to your club meetings, get them involved with the hobby. And, you know, make that effort. That is a big safety thing to contend with right now.
Well, and how do you navigate that at the field? I mean, I have yet to encounter that, but I mean, how do you navigate that at the flying field when these guys show up and they say, well, we're going to fly our quadcopter and, you know, we're going to be, I don't know, what do they do? Do they hover? Do they, because a lot of them, they fly with,
first person view. Yeah,
exactly. With the, Those head, like little camera in their eye, or how are they? I don't
right.
know. They look like something off Star Trek.
Right,
they
it's
look
a little
like
headset.
Something off of Star Trek, Mike. And then they just sit there, and we don't even know what they're doing. Then they're playing a board game the whole time, talking about level mange and powers that I don't understand. Yeah, that's the truth, though. I mean, I really don't under. I don't get it. I don't get it. It's cool, but I don't. But how do we navigate that at the model field?
Well, I don't think it's a problem at the model field. I think the problem is in the parking lots. You know, I think that's where the problem is. And I've actually gone up and spoke with someone before about, you know, that was flying one that didn't know what they were doing and didn't understand the limitations that the FAA has and all these other issues. And, you know, I pointed them to a local club and hopefully they followed up. But that's what you got to do. I mean, this is something that can dramatically harm our hobby. And
what is the rule that says, I don't know it off the top of my head, I ought to, but what is the rule for proximity to airports without expressed written permission or whatever it says?
Yeah, hold on a second. I'll tell you, isn't it 4 or 5 miles?
4 or 5 miles, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, hold on, I'll tell you for sure. Let me look them up real quick.
The reason I bring this up is because there are folks who live around here.
Yeah.
We're right off the runway at Reagan. And, I mean, it's tempting to walk out to the little park right in front of the house and just fly a little Corsair right there. How fun would that be?
Oh, absolutely.
And never get above the trees, never be an impact to the air traffic, but still, they take that stuff very seriously, and you don't want to do that. So be safe where you're operating the stuff,
yeah.
I think, is the key here. And just stay 5 miles away. Go to the Kroger parking lot 5 miles from the airport.
It's 3 miles is the limit.
3 miles.
3 miles, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, and 400 feet.
Right.
So 3 miles, 400 feet, and you ought to be good.
That's it.
Don't fly over the school either, like over soccer practice, because that's just not smart.
Yeah. Well, you know, the biggest thing is to try and tell these people, get them to understand another perspective that they don't have, is that, you know, don't take this quadcopter and fly it over a group of people who don't want you flying over them, you know?
Right.
That seems to be a big issue right now. And hopefully that can be, you know, resolved with laws at some point. But, you know, these laws follow way behind the technology, so that's always an issue to contend with.
Good show, Mike Chilson. Always fun to have you on. And
a lot of fun, man.
All right, so Toledo for you. Are you going to buy anything up there? Are you looking? Are you going after anything?
You always buy
something bizarre up there when you go up there.
I'm looking for an engine. I'm probably going to pick up another G38 for this little Polycarpov that I'm resurrecting and put it in that. So that's probably about the only thing I'm looking for.
I think you ought to buy a Russian-made engine for that. Or a Chinese knockoff.
Maybe
let's give it. Don't get like something that's just going to run right. Get something that has some questionable, reliability characteristics to make it truly scale.
Yeah, my life is complex enough. Thank you very much. I was afraid you'd stick with simple.
Are you gonna buy one with electronic ignition, or are you gonna buy? I asked you this the other day. I know the answer. Or are you gonna buy an old school Magneto?
Old school Magneto, baby.
Get your ace of spades out or whatever, and
slide my business card between the Magneto and between the wheel and the magnet. Yeah.
Are you smoking a pipe now when you work down there in the basement? Are you that far advanced, Jeff, that you sit down there and you puff on your pipe and you have some vintage music playing in your basement and
not quite there.
All the neighborhood kids, come over and look at the creation that you're working on and.
Not quite there.
It's not Norman Rockwell yet. Yeah.
Not quite there.
Because I'm thinking it's getting pretty close, Mike. You're going to be that guy in a few more years. Just watch.
You think so?
I think so. I think you are. I think you're going to turn into that guy, and you're going to have like a, Mike's model workshop going on down there.
I gotta tell you something funny though. I want to tell you a funny story.
I mean, you already are that guy, but in a modern way. Yeah, you run the largest RC site probably around there for scale building, rcscalebuilder.com.
That's right. That's true.
See, you were already that guy, and you didn't even know you were that guy.
so listen to this. You'll appreciate this. So I'm watching some program on, I think it was National Geographic Channel or something, and they're talking about myrrh and frankincense, right?
And myrrh, right?
Yeah. So I'm like, I've never even smelled those before, right? So I get on. Of course, I get on Amazon.
Get on Amazon,
And oddly enough, they have the resin of the two, a mixture of the two, and I buy the little charcoal burner, and I get
pretty nice, isn't it?
Burner, and I put that stuff on the burner, and I'm like, I want to see what this smells like. And I'm here to tell you, my friend, I just don't get it. I don't see what the allure of this is.
I don't think
it's
bad. It reminds me of church.
It does remind me.
Yeah, very nice. Well, there you go then.
But, I thought you would find that interesting, though, because I went to all that trouble to try it.
Yeah, that you've ordered it. No, that's really cool. Gold's pretty the other third gift. Gold, you have a lot of gold. And when people meet you and you smile for the first time, they know where you keep it. So it's that's good. Well, have fun in Toledo, Mike. Enjoy yourself up there.
Well, I'm going to try, my friend. I wish you were going with us.
Oh, it's fun. I haven't been to Toledo in a few years now. The last time this people are going to think this is a joke, but the last time that I went to Toledo, I stayed there in a hotel, and there, honest to God, was a beauty pageant going on. Do you remember this?
Oh yeah.
They were like what, 11 and 12 year old girls, and about 4 in the morning, there was a knock on the door, and this mother was very excited that her daughter had won, and she had Skinny Cow ice cream sandwiches for everyone in the hall because Raven won her segment of the competition, and she was so excited. And I remember thinking, if she knocks on the – I don't even know if you woke up, but I thought to myself, if she knocks on the next door, Tommy is going to just flatten this woman right there at the front. One in the morning.
I remember that.
Yeah. Oh my God, Raven won. She won best smile, which means everybody on the floor gets an ice cream sandwich. I'll never forget that as long as I live. And I thought, thank God it didn't wake Chilson up, because I don't even want to think about that. But nonetheless, that was some scary stuff going on in that. You don't realize just how serious these women take this stuff. But
Oh, yes.
That is, yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that. That was my last time in Toledo, to the Toledo show. So I don't know. I hope, I wish you the best of luck. If there's a beauty pageant, lock your door, Mike. That's all I'm going to say.
I plan on it, believe me. Hey, I got a question for you. Did you and Porter ever change out your spark plugs with those new ones?
Oh, we did, man. And it is really nice, Mike.
Is
really,
it?
Really nice. Yeah, Mike.
So you can, like, use a real spark plug now, right?
I can use a spark plug that was made after the year 2012. Before,
okay.
I had to use a spark plug that was made sometime around 1920 or 1930.
Right.
And, you know, the fact of the matter is technology's come a long way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the engine is now comfortably running modern-day spark plug. I'll give you an example. The price of the plug, now this is new old stock, the price of the plug was between 150 U.S. and 180 U.S. for one plug. Now, there's a bunch of them in there. And now the price is about, I think it was $20 for a set of an entire set of plugs, and about that, I think it was like $23, and that was 2 years worth of spark plugs for the engine. So yeah, tremendous difference, and they perform much better. So yeah, thanks for asking. See, well, still modeling. It's just a little larger.
It's just a little larger.
It's just a little larger. No.
So. Yep, that's right. So folks, those of you that don't know, Matt has a De Havilland Chipmunk, a full-scale one. And you just went through your annual, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We just went through the annual and getting ready for air show season and all the fun stuff with the airplane. So
yeah. So do you, like, get up there and try and dogfight with other guys?
No.
With Scooter?
No.
Does Scooter ever chase you?
No, Scooter's never chased me. no, but Mike and I have fun every once in a while. We'll go up and be safe about it. But it's all about being safe. And
sure.
I will not answer any of those questions on the air.
So I understand.
The answer is no, Mr. Chilson. We would never do that.
That's
Are
right.
Are you kidding me?
Never.
Never would do that. We'd never do that.
Never. That's unsafe.
That is completely unsafe, and we would never do that.
Well, so what's your next air show that you will be at?
Sun and Fun. Just a few
Sun
weeks.
Sun and Fun.
Sun
yeah.
and Fun, then Dias, then Seymour Johnson Air Force. So Dias Air Force Base is in Abilene, Seymour Johnson Air Force Base in North Carolina. Then I think I have a break. Then I'm back here for just a few days in D.C. for the Arsenal of Democracy flyover, the 70th anniversary of the end of VE Day there. And they're bringing like 70-plus airplanes up here.
Yeah.
The goal was to have one of every example from World War II. I don't think they're going to get close. They're not going to, you know, obviously there's no B-26. There's
right.
There's no A-20 that I'm aware of that's going to be here. But who knows? We'll see. So a massive, massive flyover right here over the Capitol.
Wow.
And then from there, it's Rhode Island, the National Guard open house up there in Rhode Island. I think we're doing World War II weekend, and my memory is a little foggy after that. But you can go to the website and check out our tour schedule. So
cool.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Sounds like fun, man.
Nothing in Birmingham, though.
Well, sadly. You know, that's the way we roll down here.
I'm trying to remember where else we're going to be at. You just got me thinking here, and I looked over here. There's I have the files sitting here. Oh, yeah, Andrews Air Force Base just down the street here doing that air show. Then it's my California West Coast tour. It's Wings Over the Wine Country in Santa Rosa, which is just on the outside of San Francisco, right there in the Napa Valley, getting down to Pebble Beach and Miramar, and then closing out the season with Culpeper, Virginia, which is here just a little south of the city, a big CAF show and AirFest, and the Monroe Air Show for fun in the Chipmunk. So that's going to be the season.
So when you get to Miramar, are you going to, like, rent a motorcycle and ride
and
along
ride.
The fence and, like,
I am going to ride.
Hold your fist up when the planes land?
I'm going to ride. I told somebody last year, I was like, you know, if I were flying, Goose would still be alive.
That's
I
right.
I totally stole the line off the T-shirt. And they didn't get it. They kind of looked at me and they were like, yeah, well, it's just look that up. And left. It was hot. God, it was hot last year. And everybody talks about, you know, sunny San Diego, how pleasant it is. And I'm telling you, it was incredibly hot there last year.
Yeah.
Over the top hot. And so this year, I'm hoping for a little less heat, but a phenomenal show.
Well, that's cool.
Unbelievable.
We got the Auburn fly-in coming up the end of this month. in Auburn, Alabama, than we'll be at Warbirds Over Georgia down at Mac Hodges. I think that's like the second weekend in June. And then there's a little bit of a break, I believe, until we have our Warbirds Over Alabama in Clanton, which is September, I think.
Now, you didn't say that right. It's Warbirds Over Bama.
Warbirds Over Bama. I was in Tuscaloosa this last weekend for Warbirds Over Bama.
Warbirds Over Bama.
Warbirds Over Bama. Yeah.
Did you start every flight with, I say, I say?
I say, I say.
I'm getting ready to take off. Is that how that works down there?
Yeah, that's right.
Safety's first.
You got it, man.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Well, folks, that's going to wrap it up. Another show in the can. Thanks for listening, and be sure and join us next month for our next show with more great info on our hobby and what's going on in RC Scale. Thanks for listening, and be sure and stay tuned for more great programming here on Warbird Radio. And until next time, be sure to measure twice and cut once. Good night.
Did you get the care package I sent to you, Mike?
Yeah, I did. I mixed the margaritas up, and I'm having one right now.
They weren't margaritas, but that I sent you.
But, what?
No, it wasn't. It was a bag of lime chemical cleaner that I sent you.
Oh.
It was for Miss... Never mind. They may taste a little funny. Just add some more tequila. You'll be fine.
Okay.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye.